And now I need to find some something. Give me a hand on the candy book. Evening, morning, evening.
Namo Tassa
Bhagavato
Pano,
Amen.
question to ask for this evening? Oh, the microphone.
Oh.
Okay.
Here we go.
This one too. Yes. Hello, it's Ajahn Brahm here. Very good. Okay. First question. Heard so much, learned so much, but every time when something happens, the peace is immediately broken. No matter how many times I told myself to let it go, it's all right. I can't stop worrying or complaining. Negative feelings just stay. What should I do? How to put let go into daily practice? After a while, you get fed up with worrying. It does worrying ever solve a problem? You worry about the economy. Does that solve the economy? You worry about your children. Does that make the children do any better? You worry about too many things. If worry could actually achieve something, then it'd be worth doing. But 99% of the things you worry about, it doesn't affect those things at all, but it certainly affects you. So why worry when it doesn't no good at all, except just makes you suffer? So what does worry really mean? What worry is, you go looking at the future, thinking of all the things which might go wrong. That's called worry. It's looking at the future with a negative mind. So why don't we change our mind state? If we're going to look at the future, look at the future with a positive mind. Think of all the things which might go right. And we call that hope. So my saying is, don't worry, be hopey. In other words, hope it might not happen. There was a very, very famous English philosopher called Winnie the Pooh. And one day, Winnie the Pooh was walking with his best friend, Little Piglet. They were walking in the forest, and as they were walking in the forest, a storm started to develop. The wind started blowing stronger and stronger, and the trees started bending further and further, until the storm got so strong that first, big branches came crashing to the floor. He's my sound effects man. And after the big branches, whole trees came uprooted and went crashing to the floor. And it was very dangerous walking in a forest during a storm. And Little Piglet got more and more and more worried. As he started squeezing Winnie the Pooh's hand harder and harder and harder, until Little Piglet said, "I can't go on any further. I am so worried. What would happen if a tree fell when we were right underneath it?" And that was a possibility. It was a storm, and there were many trees. What would happen if a tree fell when, bang, we were right underneath it? But the wisdom of Winnie the Pooh, the great insight came up to him when he answered the question, what would happen if a tree fell when we were right underneath it? Winnie the Pooh replied, what would happen if a tree didn't fall when we were underneath it. And that took away all the fear. Fear is what would happen if something terrible happens. What would happen if nothing terrible happens? Which is far more likely. So you don't need to worry about anything. So that's why I keep saying, don't worry, be hopey. So what are the things you're worried about anyway? One of my favorite stories is, I travel around so much. I travel to Hong Kong. I travel to Indonesia. And you just see how many of these planes, they disappear into the Indian Ocean. Or they get shot down over Ukraine. Or they get blown up by a terrorist bomb. And people were asking me, Ajahn Brahm, you're too valuable. We can't allow you to fly so much. And I said, why? I'm not afraid. And in particular, I developed the not to get worried if there's a bomb on board the aircraft. Because I developed the three advantages, the three benefits of dying in an aircraft explosion at 36,000 feet. Advantage number one of dying in mid-air explosion is instant funeral. The cremation is done on the spot. You don't have to arrange with all of these funeral agents and spend lots of money and wait in line to get a space in a crematorium. It's all done immediately. And also, your ashes are scattered all over the place, all for free. You don't have to pay money to go into one of these big cinerariums with your ashes or big pagodas, which cost a fortune to put your grandma's ashes in these places. This is all done for free, courtesy of the terrorist. Number two advantage, funerals cost a lot of money. And take a lot of time too. If ever you've organized and paid for someone's funeral, that's a lot of money. If you die in aircraft explosion, not only is it free, but your family get money from the aircraft company. You actually make something out of grandma's death. And lastly, the best advantage of all, if anyone dies at 36,000 feet, they are so close to heaven, it's easy to go the rest of the way. You're halfway there. So those are the three advantages of dying in aircraft explosions. So I'm not worried at all. That's how you overcome worry. You look for the future with a positive mind, not a negative mind. If you've got so much negativity, then everything will go wrong. And seriously, if you look at the future with negativity, you actually make bad things happen. If you look at it with hope, with a positive mind, good things happen. You actually create your future. People who worry a lot, what they worry about, they make happen. But if you hope for the best, what is the best usually happens. That's basic psychology. And you can't stop complaining. Now, come on. All your complaints. Does anybody ever listen? It's a total waste of time complaining. If you want to complain, go and find a tree and complain to the tree. It's just as good as complaining to anybody else. How many of you have complained to your husband? Does it work? They're shaking their heads. Experience. Complain to your wife. Complain about your kids. Does anything ever change? No. So complaining is a total waste of time. So when you realize it's a total waste of time, don't complain. If you want to change somebody, don't complain about their bad actions. There's another way of changing them. Praise their good actions. Because if you praise their good actions and stop complaining about their faults, something amazing happens. Their good actions start to grow and become more of who they are. Whatever you notice in somebody else, they usually start showing you back. If you notice their faults, they show you more faults. If you notice their good qualities, they show you more good qualities. So complaining just makes things worse. But if you compliment and praise and point out people's good qualities, then those good qualities get more and more and more. And so the whole goal of complaining, which is to point out people's faults so they don't make those faults again, the point of complaining is achieved by doing the opposite. Praising somebody. Building them up. Giving them compliments. Then you change people. And it's far more fun. Every time I've been to Hong Kong, Susan, Della, how many times have I complained? Exactly. Have you done things perfectly? No. But instead of complaining, I praise all the nice things you do. And so you do more of those things the next time I come. All the times I've gone to Indonesia, Tasman, how many times have I complained? He's bowing. No, you don't have to bow. I haven't complained at all. But I always praise you when you do something good. You see, now that's the way to change things. Complaining doesn't work. It just makes people upset. So, that's what you do. More praise, less complaints. How do we react, manage our emotion in daily life? If we follow Dhamma, be kind and a nice person. Sometimes the perception is we are too soft in daily life, especially in working environment. They push us to fight for better achievement due to no charity in the business. We want to get the wise guidelines to practice Dhamma in daily life. Thank you, Ajahn. So, if somebody pushes you around in the office, you don't need to push back too hard, but you can push back a little. As my story of the bad snake will show you. This was in my first book. Once there was a very bad snake. He was mean and malicious. That bad snake would bite people just for fun. His fun, that is, not the person's. And it was such a dangerous bad snake that all the people in the village and town would avoid the area where the snake lived at all costs. But as the snake grew old, the snake started to get interested in religion, like many old people do. He was wondering, what happens to snakes when they die? Is there a heaven for good snakes? And is there a bad hell for all those really nasty snakes? So he got interested. And he did hear a long time ago, there was a holy snake who lived on top of a mountain in a monastery where there's all these other little snakes wearing brown. And one day he decided to go and see the holy snake. But remember, he was a very proud and bad snake, so he decided to go in disguise. He wore a big hat, sunglasses and a false beard, and a big coat so none of his friends would recognize him. And when he came into the hall, he sat next to the door so he could leave if he needed to. And as this really holy snake was sitting on a rock, and all these little snakes were sitting around listening to every word of the holy snake. And at first, the bad snake started to listen and started to get interested. What the holy snake was saying made sense. And soon the interest got better and he became inspired. And by the end of the talk, the bad snake was converted. He took off his disguise, and all the other snakes were just so shocked to see the bad snake had come to the temple. And the bad snake came up and asked forgiveness from the holy snake of all the bad things he'd done in his life. He wanted to change and be a good snake from now on. So the holy snake gave the bad snake the 5 precepts. Of course. Not to kill, not to steal, not to commit adultery, not to lie, and not to take alcohol or drugs. So the bad snake took those 5 precepts. And on the way out, he put a donation in the box. Coins, of course. You know why people aren't giving coins? Because they make a sound. Paper money, no one knows. And he went back to his hole where he lived. Now he was going to be a good snake. Now, of course, even snakes can talk to each other, but they can't talk to humans, and humans can't talk to snakes. So he couldn't tell people that he was a vegetarian now. No one knew. Even though they saw him sitting cross-coiled in meditation by his hole, they didn't know he changed, so they avoided him. But one day, a young man was walking absent-mindedly and almost trod on the bad snake. And the bad snake did nothing, just smiled at him. And from that time on, they realized the bad snake had changed and was a good snake now. And so they didn't mind. They just walked right past the bad snake, who was a good snake now. And they weren't afraid at all. And after the men and women in the village walked past, the children, there's always some bad boys in the village. And they looked at that snake and said, "What type of snake are you? You're a disgrace to your species. Show us your fangs if you've got any, you oversized worm. You're just a slimy creep. You're not a real snake." Now, even though the snake was keeping 5 precepts, he was still a very proud snake. In his day, he was one of the toughest, meanest snakes in the whole forest. "What do you mean I've got no fangs? I've got fangs. I'm a real snake. I'm not a worm." It really hurt to be said bad things, but the snake couldn't do anything because it had his 5 precepts. So when the boys had finished scolding the snake, then they started throwing things at him. Stones, pieces of earth. And some of those stones hit the snake, and they really hurt. And the snake thought, "If I could only bite one of them, just one of them, then I know I'm a real snake, but I can't, these stupid 5 precepts, I can't do anything." And then one of the boys got a stick out and started beating the snake. And the snake couldn't do anything, couldn't bite anymore. So he had to take that beating and realized, in the real world, which is mean and cruel, you can't keep 5 precepts as a snake. You have to bite to defend yourself. So when the beating was over, the snake crawled really painfully up the mountain. And he crawled into the hall where the holy snake was giving another sermon. And the holy snake took one look at this bruised and bloody snake and said, "What happened to you?" And the bad snake, "Your fault. You and your stupid religion and precepts. In the real world, you've got to be tough. You've got to fight to defend yourself." And that's when the holy snake said, "Oh, you stupid snake. You idiot snake. You dummy snake. When you take the five precepts, it's true you're not allowed to bite. But you are allowed to hiss." And then the bad snake realized his fault. To protect himself, all he needed to do was to hiss. Just one of those boys, hiss! And that boy would have run faster than Usain Bolt. So, that was adapted from one of the stories in the Jataka tales, where the Buddha said, when you live in the real world, you don't need to bite, but you can always hiss. So, when you're at work, you can always stand up for yourself. You can always, you know, tell a person you're going too far. You can always be strong. That is being Buddhist. You're allowed to hiss. And that way, people will leave you alone. I will give an example of that, which I told the monks the other day. I was visiting my mother in London. She lives in a poor part of London many years ago. And I was going to give a talk in the Sri Lankan temple, which was about an hour's walk away. And so I went for a walk to the Sri Lankan temple, but it was going to pass this very rough neighborhood where those gangs lived. And as I was walking down the road, there was a gang of boys, of teenagers. They were assembling on the side of the road. And it was very dangerous because I'm a monk in my robes. And as they saw me, they started chanting, "Buddha, Buddha, 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 Buddha," trying to make me scared. But was I scared? No, I walked straight towards them. And as I walked straight towards them, "Buddha, Buddha, Buddha, Buddha," they threw a chant. And as I came closer, I lifted up my arm. They didn't know. I didn't know the first thing about Kung Fu. They didn't know that. But it was enough to scare them. And they all let me pass by. So that was my hissing. Okay, guys? You want to try me out? Because I was in a robe, bald head. I looked like I was Kung Fu master. They didn't know. They were stupid. They were dumb. And it worked. Or one of the other times, again with my mother. She was making my lunch for the day. Now I only eat once a day, so lunch is really important for a monk. So when somebody rang the doorbell of her apartment, I said, "Mother, don't spoil my lunch. I will answer the door." And when I answered the door, on the other side of the door, was what in London we call a gypsy woman. Like, these were sort of itinerants, they'd move from place to place. And they were selling little worthless trinkets. "Do you want to buy a gypsy charm?" she asked me. I said, "No, thank you." I was very polite. And then she looked at me, and then they used their marketing strategy. She said, "If you don't buy one of my charms, I will put a gypsy curse on you." She was trying to make me afraid. So out of fear, she would curse me if I didn't buy one of her charms. And I was in my robe. I stood up and I said, I am a Buddhist monk. My curses are much stronger than yours. And that, honestly, that's what I said. And this poor woman, her jaw dropped, her face went white, she turned away and she ran. She was so afraid. And of course, you know, Buddhists don't curse people, especially Ajahn Brahm. I've never cursed a person in my life. But she didn't know that. And that was enough to get rid of her. So this is what we do. This is what we call hissing. So I do that a lot. So if any of you misbehave, you get an Ajahn Brahm curse on you. Are you afraid? That's called hissing. I would never, ever do that. Maybe. There's always a first time. So in life, sometimes you don't need just to be so soft and weak that people just mistreat you. But also, you don't need to be violent. And then your emotions are in control, and then you can have a wonderful, happy life. How to differentiate between a mind which is relaxed and a mind which dwells in fluffy, cozy dullness? That is dullness. This is relaxed. If it's relaxed, there's no tension, and your mindfulness starts to increase and increase, you start to become happier and more aware. And the thoughts start to disappear once you get really relaxed. But if you're fluffy, cozy dullness, maybe that might start off like that. But later on, the awareness starts to increase. And you're really aware and happy. You've got full of energy. That's where my energy comes from. So if it's fluffy, cozy, you're not really awake. You're half asleep. But when you relax, you're fully awake. And happy too. What is the proper way to do walking meditation? Thank you, Bert, Susan and Della, for being such amazing organizers. Well, I did mention the walking meditation earlier, just to start at the beginning. And again, first of all, just walk naturally. Just relax maybe one or two times. And then see if you can become aware of your body, walking, your feet, what part of the foot moves up first, what last, so that you can be aware of the movement in your body, in your feet. So you're not thinking, you're aware of your body, you're aware of the walking. So that means you're stopping thinking, you come into the present moment, and you walk just noticing the feelings in your body as you're walking. Not planning the future, not remembering the past. And if that doesn't work, if you're very dull, and fluffy, cozy, to wake yourself up, to give yourself a bit of energy, we have what we call Australian walking meditation. Because when Buddhism goes to different countries, it has to adopt the culture of the country in which it lives. So, I'm going to ask you to demonstrate. No, come on, get on there. No, come on. No, I'll tell you. This is called kangaroo walking meditation. So you start like that, because people say, where do I put my hands? So you put your hands like this, and you don't walk left, right, you hop. Okay, hop. One, two. Very good, that's called kangaroo walking meditation. Thank you very much. So on the red carpet, you start at one end, hop to the end, turn around, and hop back again. Now, I ask every one of you to do that at least once in the rooms there, from one end to the other, and back again. Then you can do normal. That will wake you up. It will make other people laugh, make you laugh, and bring a lot of happiness to a lot of people. It's compassion. So try it. Got Australian walking meditation. Give it a try. Thank you. When we are sitting, we're trying to find nice position. After a few minutes, we start to feel pain in our foot back. How do we understand the body? By moving it and find new position, or just monitor to see it? Just be kind. Move. So at the very beginning, if you make a mistake and after a few minutes you ache or pain, then just move it slightly. Yes, it does interfere with the meditation, but the pain, when it's prolonged, will interfere with the meditation much more. So it's better just to move. Can we live a better life at the present moment if we are able to look into our past life through meditation? Yes, sometimes you can find out who you were in your past and why you married the person you did, or why you became a monk, or why is it you've all come to this place from so many different countries. What connection did we have in the past? You can find all that out. But it's not really necessary. And you can only do that with very deep meditation. So get into deep meditation first. And then you can remember your past life. At the moment, most of you can't remember what you did this morning. Let alone your past life. So start at the beginning. How can we deal with worries and doubt? For example, when I'm doing meditation, sometimes the doubt arises. Am I doing it right? Is meditation really work? If that thought arises, you're doing it wrong. So shut up. Be quiet and just do it. There was another of my favorite stories. When I was a young monk in Thailand, my master Ajahn Chah was building his hall, and we all had to help out. And so after the hall was finished, there was this big mound of earth. And Ajahn Chah, he asked all the monks after our one meal a day in the early morning, he said, I want you to move this big pile of earth from over there around the back where it wasn't in such a, it didn't detract from the hall. And that meant 3 days of hard work with wheelbarrows and spades. And that's really hard work. We started up, we used to eat about 8:30, finished by 9:30 in the morning. 9:30 in the morning to maybe 9 o'clock at night, working all the time. And we just have a break for a bottle of Coca-Cola, and that was all to keep us going. And this was in the hot, sweaty, mosquito-ridden jungle in Thailand. Oh, it was hot. It was tiring. Sweat and dirt and mosquitoes all over you. But I was tough. I was not a cream puff monk. I had faith. This was for my teacher. It took us 3 days to finish. And after 3 days, when we moved the earth, I went to bed that night after a shower saying, tomorrow I can wash all my clothes, have a good rest, do some more meditation. But that night Ajahn Chah went to another monastery. And the second monk, the deputy abbot, after breakfast, after our lunch, it was breakfast, lunch and dinner, just one meal. And it was really rotten food, just sticky rice and a frog or a snail or something. And he told us that I've been looking at that pile of earth. It's in the wrong spot. We're going to have to move it. 3 more days. Of hard work, shoveling earth, moving wheelbarrows. I didn't become a monk for that. But I still had faith. you know, the deputy abbot, he had a point there. You know, it was in the wrong place. So we moved it. 6 days of hard work. Tomorrow I can have a rest. But that night, this is no joke, it happened. That night, Ajahn Chah came back. And after our lunch, breakfast, dinner, whatever you call it, the one middle of the day, he said, I told you to put the earth over there. You put it over here. Move it. Which meant another 3 days of hard shoveling, moving his blowing wheelbarrows in the heat, in the dust, being bitten by mosquitoes. And it was at this point I lost my faith. These senior monks, they don't push the wheelbarrows. They tell us junior monks to do it. They sit there talking to people all day and drinking cups of tea. I have to do all the hard work. I'm not standing for this. This is terrible. And I was very angry. And I started to swear. In English, so the Thais couldn't understand. But even though they couldn't understand the words, they knew what I was going on. And one of the monks came up to me, and he gave me this beautiful Dhamma. And he said to me, pushing the wheelbarrow is easy. Thinking about it is the hard part. Wow. That was so true. Thinking and complaining, that was the difficult part. So I stopped thinking and complaining. And the wheelbarrow was very easy to push. We had a great time messing around, racing each other, you know, throwing a bit of earth over your monks you didn't like, whatever. You know, boys playing around. And after 3 days, it was all finished. And then we could have our rest afterwards. And that was 9 days of hard work, but I got the best Dhamma out of that. Was whatever you have to do in life, doing it is really easy. Thinking about it is a difficult part. So please remember that. Stop complaining. Meditating is easy. Thinking about it is hard. Dying. Dying is really easy. But thinking about it, whoa. So remember that. Doing it is easy. Thinking about it is tough. So don't think. Just do it. For goodness sake. How to tackle the problem of impatience. You said that yesterday. Okay. I'll tell you tomorrow. Ajahn. When general mindfulness increases, the sense doors tend to become more sharp. For example, body feelings or sounds. Or hearing, however, when doing breath meditation with the aim of stillness, the general mindfulness has become an obstacle as the mind tends to be aware and mindful of many things rather than only one thing. How do you overcome or harmonize and how to switch from experience to feeling the object? Oh, when this is very true, I haven't got into too much detail, probably tomorrow, as you become still. Your energy starts to increase. So you become more aware. What you see more of. What you can smell much more. And even the food starts to taste even better. It's not Michelle just does better after every day. Even though she does a good job now, you haven't tasted anything yet. After another few days of meditation, her food will be exquisite. It's just what happens. Because the senses start to become purified and alive. That is true, you can be aware of many, many things. But just choose one thing. And if you know how to do what we call focusing, then all the other things will fall away. And I use a simile of the TV. How many of you watched an in-flight movie or documentary on your way here? Did you have? Yeah. You know, this, you have the small screens on the back. And you start watching that. And after a while, all you see is what's inside the screen. And the upholstery on the back of the seat vanishes, disappears. You don't see it anymore. This is what happens with focusing. What you put in the center, your mind focuses on that, and all that's to the left, the right, above or below starts to vanish and disappear. So all you need to do, you choose your object. Maybe it's your breathing. Your breathing is in the center. The banging of the door is over here somewhere. The heat or the cold is over there somewhere. The sound is somewhere else, but you don't put it in the center. The center is always the breath. And if you put the center as the breath, after a while the sound just falls off the screen. And you don't know it anymore. Look, you're all watching me. This poor monk has fallen off the screen now. You can't see him. Now you can, because I pointed it out. But after a while, you just focus on me, and all that's to the left and right tends to vanish. That's called focusing. So the problem is, whenever there is a disturbance, we tend to focus on the disturbance, the noise, and that goes into the center, and the breath falls off the screen. That's the problem. So keep the important object, the breath, in the center. You don't need to get rid of other stuff. You know them over here somewhere, but you don't really pay attention to them. The full attention is on the breath. And then everything else falls off. I was told sadness and happiness are always together. For example, happiness arises and eventually happiness will be ended. Then sadness arises. But when sadness arises, you know that happiness is coming next. Yes! It's just like meals. Do you enjoy the food here? Do you look forward to it? But when it ends, do you feel sad? No more food. No, you don't. Because you enjoyed something. And that enjoyment stays with you. So the happiness can linger even when it ends. Can we allow happiness to stay a long time? Yeah. But in real life. What do you mean, real life? People keep talking about real life. This is real life. You go out into, Jakarta or in Hong Kong. Is that real? Everyone is wearing makeup. You can't know what people look like. And they're wearing deodorant. That's not real. People smell. But you hide it. People dye their hair. That's not real. They wear, false implants and stuff. That's not real. We live in the real world here. Out there in the world, you've got air cons and heaters and buses which are air con, offices which are heated. You don't live in the real world anymore. Even you go outside, you don't get wet anymore. You have umbrellas or stuff. No, it's great. Go out and get wet when it rains here. Get into the real world. And people spend most of their time watching TV. Is that real? Come on. So, you are now in the real world. So when you go back to the fake world, sadness seems to stay longer time than happiness. We have so many sad things in life which we can't control. Can you please advise? Because people like being sad. Chinese movies. I've never seen a Chinese movie because I'm not Chinese. But one of the ladies who comes and offers food once a week or once every couple of weeks, she came, her mother was Chinese in Bangkok. And once a week, she would go to the Chinese movies. And every time she came back again, her eyes were red. She'd been crying. Because in traditional Chinese movies, it's always the same. The boy meets a girl. The girl falls in love with the boy. But they never live happily ever after. Otherwise, the Imperial Army comes in and kills somebody, or some earthquake, or whatever happens. There's always a sad ending in the old Chinese movies. And you know that's going to happen. So you know you're going to cry. Why do you go there? Oh, because I like crying. Guys, that's girls for you. They love being sad. They go to all these weepy movies. And why do you do that for? Why do you go to these horror movies? Why do you like ghost stories? Because you like to be scared and sad. This is the trouble. We get addicted to being sad. So here, no sadness. You can be happy instead. Make a choice. I refuse to be sad. I'm going to be happy. Why not? You don't need to allow other people to control your happiness. Nor do you have to have life control your happiness. Why be sad? If Ajahn Brahm dies tonight, will you be sad? Oh, I thought you liked me. No, he's going to die sometime. Yeah, Ajahn Brahm, he's gone to Nirvana. Woohoo, well done, congratulations. No need to be sad. Whatever happens, you can look at it in a bright side or a bad side. So no need to be sad. It's your choice. Can chanting sutta replace meditation? No, it can't. Because it's too noisy. So when you meditate, you're nice and peaceful and calm and still. Did the Buddha get enlightened by chanting sutta? Because he hadn't said any suttas yet. He couldn't have done. So no. Chanting is okay. We just do a little bit of chanting here, but not too much. And sometimes we do the chanting to chase away ghosts. And the reason why it works is our chanting is so terrible. Any ghost comes anywhere close, oh, I can't stand this, and runs away. That's why it works. In this afternoon, I'm happy in meditation. It's the third time in my life I see nimitta, the lights in my mind. But after that, I have a headache. What happened to me? Thanks. Well, you can't have anything. Take an aspirin. No, sometimes you may have been trying a bit too hard. That's one of the reasons you get headache, too much effort. So let go a bit more, relax a bit more. Obviously, if you're not drinking enough water, liquids, that's a cause of headaches. Maybe you're still adjusting to the new temperature and place here. Give yourself a time to adjust to, you know, Australian climate at this time of the year. And the food and the place and the people. So after a while, the headaches will go. You mentioned that we should first relax our body before going into the breath watching. However, very often in our daily life, we may only have 20 minutes to do meditation. 20 minutes is not enough to even relax the body. Should we spend all 20 minutes to relax our body? Or should we still spend some time to watch the breathing, even if our body is not totally relaxed in that 20 minutes? Thank you. It takes more than 20 minutes to think about this. So we waste too much time. So number one, if you've only got 20 minutes, shut up, be quiet, and stop messing around. Which means you can relax your body pretty quickly if you've only got 20 minutes. And you can go to breath pretty quickly if you've only got 20 minutes. We waste so much time. How to stop missing someone during the retreat? Thank you. I was in the back of a car with, in the first years as a monk, we had the driver, Ajahn Chah was in the passenger seat, and I was in the back next to this novice monk, Gary, who was next to the translator monk. And in the middle of the journey, Ajahn Chah turned around and looked at the novice monk, Gary, from Los Angeles. And said to him, "You're thinking about your girlfriend in LA, aren't you?" Ajahn Chah was reading his mind. You've got to be very careful around senior meditating monks. They can read your mind, but you don't have to worry. After reading a few minds, you never want to read any mind again. It's a lot of rubbish. But he read this monk's mind. And this poor monk, in front of us all, he was busted. It was true. He said, yes, I'm sorry. And Ajahn Chah said, through interpreter, does not matter, don't worry, I can help you. If you really miss your girlfriend back in Los Angeles, write a letter to her and ask her to send something of yours, something personal, so that when you miss her, you can take that out to remember her by. And this American monk was very shocked. You know, I'm a novice monk now, can I do that? Is that allowed? And I said, oh, yes, 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 yes. And he thought, oh, isn't it wonderful? Ajahn Chah knows that, you know, we have loves of our life, and when we're separated from them, we miss them so much. And just having maybe a lock of her hair, smelling her perfume, or a bit of her dress, that would take away all of the pain of separation. So he thought, wow, these monks are amazing. Until what Ajahn Chah said afterwards. He said, yes, but not a lock of her hair, not her dress. Ask her for a little bottle of her shit. Of her excrement. So ask her to send it to you, so when you miss your girlfriend, take out the bottle. This is the love of my life. I love everything about her. That's the way. Ajahn Chah said it's so gross. So if you're missing someone during retreat, ask to get some of her excrement so that when you're separated from her, you can open up, oh, that's my loved one. Then you won't miss her anymore. Guaranteed. Why do we have teddy bears inside the hall? They're not teddy bears, they're metta bears. Metta is loving kindness. So I mentioned this early on. You know, you saw me doing this. Take a bear and put it in front of you and meditate with the bear. You find it gets much calmer and peaceful. Try it. It works. We've got lots of bears. We've got the big bear. We've got the little bear. The bear over there has been abandoned. Lonely. That's why, look at it. It looks so sad and lonely. You've got the koala bear here. So lots of bears there you can choose from. Put it in your lap. Meditate with it. And it works. How to deal with irrational fear, such as feeling afraid to sleep alone in a room. Easy. Take teddy bear to sleep with. Then you've always got teddy bear to protect you. Feeling somebody is watching us while we close our eyes during meditation. If that's what you feel, say they can watch me, then you're nice and safe. This is a very safe place. One of the safest places in the world. Because we've got great monks and great nuns here protecting you all the time. Recently, I was going to Phuket to teach a retreat. And when I went into the airport in Singapore, into the lounge there, there was one woman. She said, oh, Ajahn Brahm, you're on the same flight as me. That's wonderful. I don't like flying, but now you're here, I'm safe. That's what she said. So now I'm here, you're safe. This retreat center was built 6 years ago. We haven't had any casualties yet. No one has died. No one has gone crazy. No one. They've all... Who? Who? No, he didn't go crazy. He was fine. Are you talking about me? This is totally, perfectly, 100% safe. So look at the track record. But you go shopping in Hong Kong or you go shopping in Jakarta, that's not very safe. People get attacked. You get robbed. But does anyone get robbed here? No. Does anyone lose anything here? No. So this is perfectly safe. You are protected. Please remember that. I have many times followed retreat meditation at many places, but it is for the first time, at the first day, I really feel happy and peace with my meditation. Yes, you are true, Ajahn. Yes. When did I write this? Looks like my writing. When someone allow himself and do meditation without purge and strict rule, just be ourselves, we can do meditation easier. It is amazing for me because it is not boring or painful. Exactly. This is the best way to meditate. Relax, do it naturally. And you find you do more meditation that way. Those people who really force you, you do end up doing less. You mentioned that we can be aware of our body in order not to think that much. But I found that I still have a lot of thinking. Even I try very hard to be aware of my body. What can I do? Don't try. It's a trying causes your thinking. So just try reverse psychology. Try and think as much as you can. Because sometimes this works. You know what happens? I've seen this. People come in here to meditate and they fall asleep. And then you go to bed and you can't go to sleep. So to solve that problem, when you come in here to meditate, try to sleep. When you go into your room after this is finished, try to meditate. You fall fast asleep. Psychology. So try to think. And maybe you'll be quiet. Try to be quiet and you think. Give it a try. Dear Rajan, in meditation, how far can willpower go? Not very far. We don't use willpower. We use wisdom power, which is much stronger than willpower. Willpower is like banging your head against the brick wall. Wisdom power. You see, there's a door right next to it. Go through the door, you stupid. But a lot of time, bang, 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 there's a door just over there. That's the difference between willpower and wisdom power. And in the next few days, you'll hear more about wisdom power and how we can use insight and wisdom to get so peaceful and so calm. What willpower promised it will give you, but never actually supplies, wisdom power gives you every time. So that's the last of the questions. And I'm very mindful of the fact that poor old Tasvan has got to translate all of this, including all the jokes and the funny stories. And you must also explain with Indonesian about kangaroo walking meditation. Demonstrate as well. So you can all have a good night. So that's the Q&A tonight. So, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Have a good night. See you in the morning. Very good. Oh, and Anthony, that Astra car was sold today, but there's another one. Because Mr. Dillbag, over the back there, where's your Dillbag? He's going to become an Anagarika in 8 days' time, novice. So he's going to renounce all his worldly goods. And he's got his old car at the back over there, he wants to flog. So if you want to have a look at it, go and see Mr. Dillbag. Okay, I'm also used car salesman, entertainer. So, Mr. Bill, back to the back. That's all, folks. See you tomorrow.
I'm exhausted.